This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good Thursday to you. Good throwback Thursday to you as we continue along on Sports Map Radio with our previews. Seattle Seahawks are the team we're focusing on today. This will wrap up the NFC West, and we will have two more divisions before we start the football season. We still have to do the AFC West and the NFC East. But we're rolling along with the Seahawks, who did something last year that you don't see teams ever do, and that is trade a franchise quarterback. They did that with Russell Wilson. They did that when the back and forth between the organization and Russell Wilson was just getting to a point of craziness. Wilson wanted more control. He wanted guys fired. And they finally just said, you know what? We are looking ahead at the future, and the future doesn't include you. But they made the trade, and they sent him to Denver. And in the end, they got a couple of players, including Drew Lock, who reportedly John Schneider had liked. And they were going to make him and Geno Smith battle for the starting quarterback position with the Seahawks. It looked like a complete rebuild. But it looked like something that could backfire because, again, teams just don't do this. It's not to say you make everything work with your franchise quarterback and give them everything that they want. But when you find the guy that consistently puts you around the playoffs, it's very hard to just cut him and let him go and trade him away. And that's exactly what the Seahawks did. And what ended up happening was something I don't think anybody saw coming at all. The Broncos were supposed to be somewhat competitive. Maybe you didn't think that they were going to be a Super Bowl team with Russell Wilson, but they were supposed to be competitive in the division. Russell Wilson was going into an AFC that was going to be, had great young quarterbacks, but now he was going to be an additional one to the long list. They have finally found their franchise quarterback since Peyton Manning retired. They had gone through everybody in every direction. Remember, they drafted quarterbacks. They brought in free agents. They brought in a former Super Bowl champion in Joe Flacco. They went crazy for every new quarterback that was coming, and none of them worked. They have yet to make the playoffs since winning Super Bowl 50. And oh, by the way, we're heading into Super Bowl 58. And Russell Wilson was supposed to change everything. But there was one group that sat back and kind of went, we'll see. And that was the brass of the Seattle Seahawks. Because they were willing to make the bold move. And oh, by the way, knowing that their schedule had Denver at the beginning of the season. Or that they were going to be hosting Denver at some time. I think the schedule came out later after the trade. But they knew Denver was on the schedule for the upcoming season. They did it anyway. They got a huge package. And they were able to pick up all of these picks that have turned out pretty well. Their drafts have been excellent the last two. But the rest of the story really involves Geno Smith. There is sometimes in sports where we see athletes at a particular age just kind of go with whatever the cards are being dealt. They've lost a little of that drive to go, I can do this. I can be a starter. You see it a lot in the NBA, for example. There are a lot of journeymen in the NBA, a lot of bench guys in the NBA, who've realized at some point, look, I can make a very good living at 32 years old, bouncing on some teams, playing 10 minutes a night, contributing 4 or 5 points a game, maybe a couple of good rebounds. Maybe I'm a defensive stopper. I'm not going to start in this league anymore. I don't have the quickness. But you know what? Teams still need me. See it in baseball. Where team players are like, yeah, I could still be a good DH. I may not be your everyday outfielder, but I can go in there in a pinch. In the NFL, all sorts of different positions. And Geno Smith was heading into that point where he was getting a little older. He had been in the league a long time. He had been a backup for a while. And that looked like where he was going to be going. And it looked like in Seattle that even if Geno Smith or Drew Lock had won the quarterback battle, it was very likely that Seattle might be looking somewhere else. Maybe they could get something out of Drew Lock. He was still relatively young. But for Geno Smith, it was like, well, if he's going to start, he's holding the position until we find the right guy. And then something happened. They started winning football games. Now, they didn't win a lot of football games. They didn't go 12-5. They didn't go 13-4. They went 9-8. All right. But it was way more wins than people anticipated. And they were able to go to the playoffs. They beat the Rams in their season finale. The Lions beat the Packers to end that little threat. And they were on their way to the postseason. Now, one thing about the Seahawks last year, they could not beat San Francisco. Not only could they not beat San Francisco, they couldn't really hang with San Francisco. In the end, though, they did go to the playoffs. And Denver swam in a 5-12 season where Nathaniel Hackett was bad and Russell Wilson was bad, too. You can blame a lot of it on the coaching, but Russell Wilson was terrible. Now, people are looking at this season upcoming now and saying, okay, you've got your QB now. You've signed him to an extension. He's the starter. You nailed the draft. Not only with your picks, but the picks you got from Denver. You have nailed the draft. You had a pretty good offseason in which you filled in some holes. So what's in store for the 2023 version of this team that shocked us all, got Geno Smith comeback player of the year? Again, big picture on this. The Seahawks gambled and took a huge bet that they were right about Russell Wilson. That they were right that they had one of the two quarterbacks that could do pretty good things. But I got to be honest with you. I even think that the organization was surprised by this. I'm not saying that they went in with the idea that they were going to win three games or four games. But I'm telling you, that was a surprise on how good they played and how good Geno Smith was. And you know what was even more surprising? Was that he did it in week one against Denver. He went 23 of 28 in that game for 195 yards and two touchdowns. With all the pressure in the world, with people still kind of deciding whether or not Russell Wilson should still be a Seahawk when he was coming back. Do they boo him? Do they cheer him? He gave them a Super Bowl championship, even though it was mostly the defense. A quarterback gets credit. I know. But they did put up a lot of points on Denver. He was still the quarterback that had gone to two Super Bowls. They should have won two. You remember what happened against New England. But as he was being cheered slash booed for forcing his way out of Seattle, and fans don't like that when they want you to love the team as much as they love the team, Geno Smith was dealing with a world of pressure and handled it beautifully. Bad decisions at the end by Denver, kicking a huge like 64-yard field goal at the end was a mess. Russell Wilson, they just mismanaged that final drive. But in the end, it was a win. One of nine for the Seahawks this season. But like I said, it's one thing to have a good year from your quarterback where you surprise some teams, you shock some teams, you win nine games. Now you got to go into this season where people are like, okay, there's some weapons on this team. There are a quarterback now that is the starter. There's no battle for it. He's gotten his money. You're not going to sneak up on anybody. So now what do you do? Some say that if Brock Purdy is not as healthy as we think he is, there might be an opening for the Seahawks to win the division. That's not as far-fetched because there really is only one team other than San Francisco that can win the division based on analysis in the preseason here, and that is Seattle. As we've mentioned this week, Arizona is just so far down the pecking order, and the LA Rams have too many holes to fill that it's hard to believe that any of those two teams will straighten up and play well enough this season to contend for the division if the Niners go from 13-4, let's say, to a more pedestrian 10-7. If that was the case, then Seattle would be right in it. Now, I think there's always, whenever you're talking about teams in a division that are talking playoffs and talking about winning a division, you know, there's always the obstacle you have to get over. I mean, the Jets, for example, with Aaron Rodgers, they don't just have to get by the Bills. They have to get by the Dolphins, too. And in some respects, the Patriots, because, you know, they finished last in the division. Now they've got Aaron Rodgers. They've got divisional foes they have to overcome. For the Seahawks, it is the 49ers. It will be the 49ers. They've got to find a way to win those games against San Francisco. Their defense was pretty good last year. Their offense could be more explosive this year. They got one of the more exciting wide receivers in DK Metcalf. They've got a couple of other new wide receivers, including rookie Jackson Smith and Jigba. So they've got some very nice upside players. They've got some really good upside talent on this roster. It'll be fun to talk about them today. All right, we will continue along as we move along with the Seattle Seahawks. And we also will do the thing we normally do on Friday, since both Ron and I are off tomorrow. We will analyze the entire division. So that's kind of how we do it, where we kind of go every day, every team gets a day. And then on the Friday show, if we don't have any makeup guests, we sort of give you a full analysis of the division. And this one is, again, not one of the more exciting divisions, but it does have two teams on it that have pretty good storylines in terms of being successful. The 49ers, can they cross into Super Bowl territory with Brock Purdy? And now the Seahawks, what is Act 2 in the post-Russell Wilson year? Now, again, the Rams and the Arizona Cardinals, both of those teams have work to do this upcoming season in terms of build and rebuild back up. As we talked to Ed Smith during the week about the Cardinals, use every adjective you can. Construct, deconstruct, break down, rebuild, reload. They all work. And in the Rams, it was the bill is due, they've cashed in their chips, but now they've got to pay the bill. And the bill is, you know, they are going to need some work to fill in a lot of holes. So this will be a fun division, at least to kind of talk about from the really good stuff and the really bad stuff. But I think the Seahawks can be really good stuff. And there's a lot of people optimistic about this being a team. When you talk about who's in contention in the NFC, it's Philadelphia on top. It is San Francisco. Detroit went 9-8 last season, and everybody loves them. But don't discount a 9-8 Seahawks team. All right, got a very special Throwback Thursday for you. We'll continue along. It's Wake Up Call. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us again on Thursday.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, it's a Throwback Thursday to 1976, because on this date in 1976, yours truly was born, Ron Culver.
Yay! Yay me.
Happy birthday, my man. Happy birthday. So wish Ron a happy birthday on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, and of course, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Happy birthday, man. We're doing some good music in 1976.
It was kind of fun.
It's a little bit of everything. Should be some rock, should be some disco, should be
very much everything.
Yeah, it should be everything. This should be very good.
I will say that, you know, I was very choosy on which, I guess, disco songs I play.
Right, sure.
I'll put on here, because I could have put a whole lot, but I was like, no, I don't want people to turn the radio off.
Little disco.
So
very nice.
I think I only chose one other disco song.
Okay, very good. Very good.
But yeah, we got some rock, we got some punk, pop, I don't know. One song, I don't know what category it fits in, but we're going to play it.
All right. So again, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I watched the second episode of Hard Knocks last night. I got to stop telling people I don't watch this show, because apparently now I do watch this show. I always go, every year, I watch it sometimes. Sometimes I don't.
Really,
and then when
I
get bored, I'm like, oh yeah, Hard Knocks happened last night or Tuesday. Let me watch it.
I'm just watching it for Liv Schreiber.
Yeah. Oh, he's in it, man. He showed up in that season one. It was so cool. It was so cool. Like, arrived at Jets practice.
Yeah.
So I said this before. I'm going to repeat this. I compared it to Real World, where I made the comparison that first couple of episodes, seasons of Real World, nobody knew what it was. Then when everybody knew what it was, they sort of realized what they could do with the cameras. And it is clear to me, Aaron Rodgers knows he's on Hard Knocks. No one can convince me otherwise. Some people say, like, oh, the players just do their thing and the cameras catch them and they're so secretive. You don't even know you're on TV. You don't even know the cameras are rolling. You get the true self, you know, you get the true. And that's the case for a lot of the people that have been featured on Hard Knocks. But I think Aaron Rodgers knows the cameras are rolling on him all the time, because he is morphing into this personality that I actually like. I've always been very hit or miss with Aaron Rodgers while he was in Green Bay. I always kind of thought, you know, he's a little surly. I think sometimes he's, you know, he's got some rough edges. He loves being on the Jets, at least what he is showing on Hard Knocks. He loves being on this team. He is excited to be on this team. I think he's got that thing that Tom Brady had, which is people are going to doubt this. People are going to wonder what I could do. I'm going to show what I can do. I've got a rebirth. I'm old. How many opportunities am I going to get to be in a new place, in a new position? He knows he's the man. He's very, very clear. He knows everything around that team revolves around him. He knows that. And the way he interacts with his offensive linemen, the way he interacts with players on the defensive side, the way he reacts to referees in camp practices and other players and other coaches, like they showed them going to Charlotte to participate in a joint practice with the Carolina Panthers last week, knowing other players, going up and talking to other players, talking to other coaches, ribbing other coaches, anybody that he has a relationship with that has found themselves on the Panthers, he would go up to them and talk to them and kind of rib them a little bit, but give them a hug and say how much he loves them and whatnot. It's a very warm Aaron Rodgers. It is an Aaron Rodgers that's a little bit more open than the guarded player that we saw over the last couple of years where you didn't even know what he was thinking. Does he want to go to Denver? Does he not want to go to Denver? Did he want to get traded somewhere else? Where does he want to go? Does he want to play for Green Bay? Does he not want to play from Green Bay? Does he want to play at all? Does he not want to play at all? Who's he dating? What? It's like anything like that. Now, don't get me wrong. Rodgers has been on Jeopardy as a host. He's done some funny like videos. Like there was one video where he was working in a coffee shop and people asked him if he was Aaron Rodgers. He's like, no, but I get that all the time. Right? There are things that Rodgers has done to sort of raise his humanity profile. But I think he's very aware what this is, what this can do. I think he's very aware that he's happy. He's excited. He wants to show that. Look, the Jets have some work to do. Their offensive line is not good this preseason. This has been terrible. Yesterday, the New York media had counted 6 potential sacks in a workout with the Buccaneers, which, by the way, erupted in 6 fights so far. By the way, that's true. Little 6 scuffles have occurred between the Jets and the Buccaneers. But it's really fascinating. This is one of the better seasons of Hard Knocks given the circumstances. And look, I got to be honest with you. This thing's been on for, what, 20 years? 2002, 2003?
Yeah.
When it launched, I think
there wasn't there a little small hiatus?
Yeah, yeah. There was
like a two-year gap or something. But, yeah, I mean, 20 years it's been around.
And most of the time, like, I'll be honest with you, I couldn't have cared less about the Atlanta Falcons when they were on. I just...
Here we go. Did they have
whatever.
One?
Yeah, a couple years ago, right? Right. I don't care. Like, the teams we really know, that we really want to know about, they're never on Hard Knocks because they're good. They make the playoffs. The Patriots have never been on Hard Knocks, for example. The Steelers haven't been on Hard Knocks, right? You got to be out of the playoffs. You can't have been on the show for a while. Like, there's all these rules. It's always down to, like, 4 teams, and none of them are that interesting. Yeah, the Browns was kind of interesting with Baker Mayfield. But Aaron Rodgers and the Jets... This is very good TV. This is very good television. There is a way the Jets players, the younger Jets players, realize there's a new sheriff in town. Not to steal Peyton Manning's, you know, nickname, but there really is. There's a new way now. Like they went from a young football team with a rookie head coach and Robert Saleh, like, hey, whatever, we'll see what happens. We're in a tough division, but let's go out there and play hard. Now they know, like, For some of these guys, it's their second year in the league, third year in the league, whatever it may be. And now they know that they have to win the Super Bowl. They have to go to the Super Bowl. They've got Aaron Rodgers. They had a quarterback meeting on the show where I think the quarterback coach, so it wasn't Nathaniel Hackett, the OC, it was the quarterback coach, had two Aaron Rodgers fakes, like potential handoffs. So they had the picture of Aaron Rodgers sticking the ball out. And the other quarterbacks in the room had to guess whether or not this was going to be a run or a fake. And sometimes they missed it because Aaron Rodgers is so good at deception. He's so good at being able to stick the ball out and whip it back in and throw it. And this is the kind of stuff. This is the level of respect that everybody is showing Rodgers. Now, don't get me wrong. I get it. There's an editing room. They are totally taking tons and tons of film, and they can manipulate anything they want. But the level of respect that this guy already has with the young players of like, wow, it's a game changer now. Like, we're not going to be a team. It's going to go through this season and hope for the best. We now have to have the best. If we don't, we're not going to win it. We're not going anywhere. But I have to tell you the one part about Hard Knocks last night. They brought in a magician mentalist to entertain the players. This guy is... there might be real magic in the world, Ron Culver. There might be real magic.
No, don't say that.
This guy, he gets one of the players. I wish I could remember the players' names. I was kind of half watching it at this point. Because I don't really care for that kind of stuff. Like when they go, hey, we brought in a comedian. I'm like, all right, whatever. It's fun. They get to laugh and they get to have a break. I'm more interested in the football stuff. So my mind was on something else. I was doing something, was typing some show notes on the laptop. But the mentalist came in. He's labeled mentalist. He grabs one of the players and he says to one of the players, he says, okay, you could be any number you want to be. Any number at all. Turn your back to the crowd. So he turns his back to the crowd. And he takes a whiteboard. And on the whiteboard, he puts the number. He puts a number on his back. Draws the number 10. He says to the guy, all right, you could be any number in the NFL you want. They changed the rules. You could be any number. What would you be? He goes... He said, you're coming out when you are a number. And he goes, 10. And everyone goes crazy. So then he goes, he takes a puzzle. And he starts talking about, hey, guys, this team is like a puzzle. It comes together like a puzzle. So he has one of the players come up. He throws all the pieces on the table. And he goes, put your arm down on the table and swipe half of these pieces away. Swipes half the pieces. He goes, now pick two pieces in each hand. He picks up two pieces. And he goes, look at both of those pieces. Look at both of those. Discard one of them. He takes a look at both of them. He throws one away. And the guy reveals a puzzle. And he guys takes the piece out of the guy's hand. It's the one piece that's missing out of the puzzle that he's made. But the best one was when he gave a guy a book of 60 animals that are not NFL mascots.
Okay.
He says, there's 60 animals in this book. Flip through them. Like giraffe, hippopotamus, gorilla, right? All these things. And he gives Aaron Rodgers a deck of cards. He gives him a deck of cards and he says, I'm going to reach in, Aaron, and you think of a card and I'm going to reach in. He reaches in. Rodgers guesses three of diamonds. Sure enough, it's three of diamonds. But then he turns to the other guy and he goes, tell me the name you picked out of the book. And he goes, goldfish. He goes, goldfish? He goes, wow, that's interesting. Rodgers, show me the deck of cards. And the deck of cards was a little box, and in the box was a goldfish. So instead of the deck of cards, it was a little box that had a goldfish in it. Dude, real magic. Real magician. Scary burn at the stake. Real magician.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, happy birthday, Ron Culver. We're doing music from 1976. This is Kansas, right? Kansas still around? Is that a band like you can find at a casino?
I think so.
Somewhere? Hey, ladies and gentlemen, Kansas will be performing here at blah, 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 casino and lounge.
I can still hear like the cheers.
Yeah.
Like when you break out into that acapella.
Yes.
Right at the beginning. That's why I couldn't fire a rejoin on top of it. It's like, yeah, it's disgraceful.
By the way, I wanted to give the mentalist credit because, again, I was kind of half watching at the time. His name is Oz the Mentalist.
Of course it is.
And Adam Schefter put out on Twitter that he'll also be on ESPN College Game Day this year, working with and NFL Game Day. This season he'll do stuff with the Cowboys, Bengals, Packers, and then also in the college game, a couple of teams, including Michigan.
He better go easy because I can see Lee Corso dying.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. No
I don't kidding. Mean to get morbid on this, but Oz could kill Lee.
Yeah. It was really – I always freak out with the – and again, I don't know how it's done. I know some of you out there are smarter than me. You figure out these tricks. But when he gave Aaron Rodgers the deck of cards – and Aaron looked at the cards and then collapsed them in his hand and then opened his hand. And it was, instead of the cards, it was a box with goldfish in it. If he had done that, I get sleight of hand, right? I get like, being able to manipulate your hands, tuck something under a sleeve, bring something out of a sleeve. I get that. But when you give something to somebody and they go, here's a quarter, and they took the quarter and go, put it in your hand. Is it a quarter? And they look at it and they go, put it in your hand. And they go, you know what? I believe in a compound interest. Open up your hand. And there's like six quarters or there's a dollar bill. Like, that's what I want to know, how they do that.
Without, that's what I'm telling. I'm coming to the conclusion that some of these new magicians and mentalists that are coming forward, they're aliens.
Yeah, right.
That's the only logical explanation for the magic that they do, is that they're aliens. That, or, you know, they're able to manipulate time and space where they're going, you know, thousands of miles per second, kind of like the Flash.
Yeah.
And we just don't see it. That's the only thing that, you know, because some of them, I mean, I can't imagine someone being that good with their hands.
Yeah, he brought down, I think it was Mecole Hardman, he brought down to the stage, off the stage, and he said, he goes, obviously you guys are here to win the Super Bowl, right? And everybody's like, yeah. And he says to Mecole, he goes, all right, you're in the Super Bowl. Who are you playing in the Super Bowl? Pick a team. Who are you playing? And he goes, San Francisco. Now, I'm not gonna lie to you. Guessing San Francisco is not a magic trick, right? I mean, like, if you
right.
were, but, you know, he could have said Eagles. He could have said Cowboys. He could have said anybody else. So then he says, what's the score? You win, what's the score of the Jets' big Super Bowl win against the 49ers? He goes, 31-21. Sure enough, the mentalist turns around a card. It's got the Jets and the 49ers 31-21. Like, he – now, sometimes I know how that trick is done. Sometimes – it's on a table. The table has a cover on it. There's somebody underneath the table. They're writing in the answer, and they've somehow manipulated it to get the thing you want to show the audience up on the table. But this was a card that was flipped, and there was nobody around it. So how he did that, I have zero idea. But you're right, man. Some of this stuff, man, makes you go
aliens.
No other answer. Aliens. Aliens. And I don't really want to know, to be honest with you, how he does it. Like, I'm not one of those guys
that's
needs to know.
You know,
the truth.
Like,
I'm not that guy.
You remember what was a couple years ago, we had the masked magician.
That's right. He used to reveal the tricks, right?
Yeah, and it was kind of like you watch it, you know, you watch that first one, it was like, oh, that was interesting. And then, you know, he did another one. You're like, all right, I don't want to know this.
Well, there are magicians out there, and, you know, Penn Jillette is one of them, who says, look, we're liars. You know, he says, we're liars. He said, we are tricking you, and he makes no bones about it. He's like, it's a trick. And he has said many times to people, it's what I do every day, all day. Penn and Teller. It's me and Teller, we work on these tricks hours and hours and hours a day. That's all we do. Whatever you do 8-9 hours a day, we're trying to make the little ball disappear in our sleeve. That's what we're trying to do. So he makes no bones about it. He goes, and so we're liars. We're the great liars, because we want you to believe in magic, but magic doesn't exist. These are tricks that we've perfected. But when you watch, and so other magicians are just like, no, I've learned this ancient thing in the mountains, and you'll never know. And there's a shaman somewhere gave me, you know, all that stuff. And there were there was this one guy, and the great Randy, and he was trying to debunk people that claimed to have psychic powers, a claim that they could do like bend spoons with their mind and stuff like that. He would always say, like, it's one thing to be a magician in the entertainment field when you're like, hey, look, I've perfected a trick. Don't you find this trick great? It's magic. Yay. But it was another when people were actually like, I'm claiming to have supernatural ability to like bend a spoon like Uri Geller. And he would try to debunk all these people. But I'm the person that doesn't want to know the trick. I don't want to know how that guy made the goldfish box appear in Aaron Rodgers' hands. I have no interest. I just want to enjoy it. I like going to see good magicians. I have no problems. I'm not trying to figure it out. What I don't like is, I don't like when I'm, because I'm dumb, I don't like it when I can figure out the trick and I go, come on, you could do better than that. Like using a two-way mirror, or, you know, I think I saw a talent show where there was this couple and they claimed to be mental people. I think it was America's Got Talent. And I think that was like one of the rounds, championship rounds. And the girl claimed to like, she was the mental person. And so like they gave one of the judges like bubble gum or something. They said, chew the bubble gum. What flavor is it? And then she would say what flavor it is. And then she didn't get it right, and then she turned her head and she was like, look at me, lemon. Is it lemon? Like, she was falling apart. But what happened was somebody guessed that they didn't, you know, obviously this wasn't something they revealed, but they said, look, you know what happened? His little toe tapping device in his shoe didn't work. He's like, he's tapping out to her it through a message thing, and it failed. So when she said, I think it's cinnamon, and the girl goes, no. And she's like, bubble gum. No. And she turns, and then she's trying to see if there's a sour look on her face. Like, that's when I go, eh, come on, you could do better.
Yeah.
Like, you could do way better.
That's when you're going to click.
Yeah, exactly. But Oz the Mentalist, I wanted to give him credit for last night's, well, it was Tuesday night's Hard Knocks episode. I just watched it on TV.
From one of the moons of Jupiter.
No, that's right.
It's in his bio. I just put it there.
That's right. But the real magician is going to be Aaron Rodgers when he makes all of the, makes all the doubters disappear.
See, God, am I on the fence with this one.
I am too. I still am.
It's like, I can't get past what the Bills have been doing the last couple of years. I can't get past the rise of the Dolphins. And now you're adding the Jets into this mix. And yeah, Aaron Rodgers is a first ballot Hall of Famer. No doubt about it. But does one man make that much of a difference overnight?
What I don't like is this. This is what I don't like. And you just touched on it. We have gotten this AFC. Take Rodgers out of the equation for a second. We have gotten this AFC loaded with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Loaded with some of the premier quarterback talent in the NFL. Guys that are on the rise like Justin Herbert and Trevor Lawrence. Guys who have been established and you know what you're getting with them, like Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, right? There is a loaded conference. Aaron Rodgers coming in and people going, eh, Jets, Super Bowl. That disrespects the entire talent level. He is a ship. He is a large ship in a bay, but it does not mean he's docking first.
No, and I don't see the Brady effect with him.
Yeah,
like, well, you know, because it's twofold. Brady had the benefit of a weaker NFC to get all the way
very
there,
much so, and he knew that.
Yeah,
he knew that in a weaker division, and he knew that
weaker division. But you know, the NFC, I mean, as a whole, wasn't really that strong. That, you know, he was able to kind of say, all right, you know, if we get by one or two teams, we're in the Super Bowl. It's a tall, tall mountain, what's going on in the AFC right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, the only division that we could probably find a clear-cut winner would be the South.
He was in a division. Brady joined the division. I believe the Saints were still good because they still had Breeze. So I think the Saints were still good. But other than that, it was Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Nobody from the East. Nobody was playing well in the East. And I think Seattle was a good team, if I'm not mistaken. And the Rams.
San Francisco
were all right.
Was up there too, right?
Yeah, but that's about it. So that was what, 2020 when he went over there. So, and it was a mess. Remember, that season was a mess. So it's like it's hit or miss. Some teams caught. They had to play twice in 5 days and whatnot. But it was. But you're right. It wasn't this loaded NFC that Brady was going to, but it was a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that was not bad. They just needed better quarterback play, and he was going to be the better quarterback play. You're talking about a Jets team that has not been in the playoffs for a while, have not found a franchise quarterback in a while, and they're in a conference where I can convince you that the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. I can convince you the Bengals can win the Super Bowl. I can convince you that the Dolphins and the Bills can win the Super Bowl. I can convince you that maybe the Ravens could win the Super Bowl. Like, it's not just as easy as Rodgers coming in and poof, the Jets are champions. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, on X, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, and wish Ron Culver a happy birthday. That's Ron with two N's.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Has the Saturday Night Lights skit for this song ruined it or made it better?
Both.
That's my big question. Both, right?
Both.
Like, it's a good song. It's got a good rhythm to it.
It was good. I mean, yeah, it was. Yeah, I liked it before I saw the Saturday Night skit, but then.
That's right.
You know,
then the skit came, and now every time you hear it, you just think cowbell.
I only hear the cowbell now.
You only hear the cowbell.
I don't hear the vocals.
You hear Will Ferrell and Jimmy Fallon laughing his tail off.
on the side because he can't keep a straight face.
Was Jimmy Fallon the worst cast member ever on Saturday Night Live?
The worst. Jimmy Fallon couldn't keep a straight face in any skit that
he ever
did.
He was ever in.
You can go on YouTube and just find skit after skit after skit after skit where Jimmy Fallon couldn't keep a straight face.
He couldn't do it. I mean, and that's – I'm not saying he was terrible, like he's a terrible actor or anything like that. I mean, he's not great, but, he's a good Tonight Show host.
Yeah.
I guess he still has the job. But, yeah, I mean, he probably would admit that he was the worst cast member ever on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, right. You can make that point.
By the way, I've gone down this rabbit hole. I don't remember these skits. They always feature Jason Sudeikis. Who's the other guy who does all the voices? You had that TV show Barry.
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader and another guy. It's always those three and whoever the host is that week.
Yeah.
And they sit around a table and they'll put a song on, and then they tell you what this song reminds them of. They are hysterical.
Amazing.
I mean, every one of their memories is a horrible, horrible thing. And they always come back like, it's like, I remember, it's just, I don't even want to say it on air because of how bad it is.
Right.
It deals like with murder, like, oh, this song, I remember. And they're like fond memories for them. Oh, I remember the time I shot my wife,
It's crazy.
But they're hysterical. And I don't remember them. And then I found like five or six of them. I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic writing.
Sometimes we get that. It's 1976 on a Throwback Thursday, Ron's birthday.
My birthday.
There was a couple of others that we were tossing around.
Yeah.
Including the Davis Love winning the PGA Championship at Winged Foot. Okay.
Yep, that was one.
And then Richie Ashburn hitting foul pitches hits Alice Ross twice. He hit the same woman twice in a baseball game in 1957.
In the same at bat.
So in the same at bat, Richie Ashburn fouled one that broke her nose, and then while she was being removed from her seat, he hit her again. That's pretty amazing. I don't think you could do that if you tried to do that. You couldn't.
No. I mean, the first time he broke her nose, and so then they put her on a stretcher, which, I guess that's what you did back then for a broken nose. And he took aim again. He wasn't finished.
No,
he wanted to
done
finish
her
off, so he hit her when he was on the stretcher.
Apparently the first one didn't do the job, so the second one had to go through.
She's got
to
have an autograph.
I got to believe, right? He's got to visit her, say hi, pose for one of those 1957 pictures. Yeah. Look over here and smile. Snap. Shh. Light bulbs bursting. So,
and that was the very definition of Scotty something, those funny videos. The guy was a goalie and he kept getting hit in the face.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Poor woman. Got hit twice by two foul balls. Meanwhile, people go to the games wanting foul balls to come to them. They put in gloves and everything, and they can't get one. And she got hit twice. It's nuts. All right, that was, again, Throwback Thursday. It's Ron's birthday today. And by the way, a couple of injury notes from yesterday. It looks like Russell Gage is going to be out for the season for the Buccaneers. He suffered an injury. And then Treylon Burks of the Tennessee Titans is going to miss some weeks. He suffered a strain. These are non-contact injuries, but he went down in a joint practice with the Minnesota Vikings. So those were two that happened yesterday. Plus, there's always like some nicks and cuts along the way as we get ready for the upcoming season.
And, injuries sustained from fisticuffs.
That's right.
Because the Commanders enjoy practice. They got a little fight. Remember,
Commanders,
we brought it up yesterday.
Yes, we did. Commanders were in a fight with Baltimore.
There it is. I think so.
Yeah.
Always happens.
I mentioned earlier, the Jets and the Buccaneers, they got in like six of them. If you want to count like small scuffles, and then there were a couple of big ones.
Always happens. I just clicked on an article here. It says NFL training camp fights are in serious danger of jumping the shark.
I know it's nuts.
It's like clockwork. We said it at the very beginning. Once we heard there was joint practices, it was like it's inevitable. Fights always happen.
Time. It's like you go in with permission to do so.
Right.
Dan Campbell last year on Hard Knocks, he said, "If you start a fight, I'm cutting you." I'm like, "Stop."
No, you're not. You're joining.
No, you're not. I was thinking about that. I'm watching Hard Knocks last night, and the Jets got in an inner team fight, so they had a scuffle within the team. And I was thinking, man, Robert Saleh's got to be really angry at this, right? Probably throwing some people out, you know, to get out, making, you know, releasing guys. No, he was just like, yeah, it happens. You know, whatever, the fight in the team. Do you remember years ago on Hard Knocks, Jeff Fisher cut a guy who broke the curfew rule with his girlfriend?
Yes.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
With the Rams, right? The guy came in. They had this on the show. The guy comes in and he says to the guy, hey, man, you know, rules are rules. You know, what part of that did you not understand? And the guy's like, oh, I'm sorry, coach. You know, I didn't know she was coming by and she stayed longer than I thought and whatnot. It's just a simple girlfriend was in the hotel room when no one was allowed in the hotel room kind of thing, right? And Fisher goes, All right. And it's kind of calm. And then he goes, but we have decided to release you. And it's like heartbreaking because the guy's not, he's the guy trying to make the team, but he's expendable, right? Like he wasn't going to do that to whoever else was on the Rams roster that he was potentially starting. But this guy was fighting for a position. They probably evaluated it in the room and they went, can we afford to lose this guy? Yes, we can. Is this guy going to sign with any team and be a threat in the National Football League? No, he's not. Well, let's get him into the office and cut him.
He's one of those things. They were probably going to cut him anyways.
They're probably going to cut him anyway. They
were became more dramatic with, yeah. You know, let's do it this way.
And now you can go into the team and go, hey, I don't know the kid's name. Let's say it was Mike. We had to release Mike. Mike is gone. Mike and his girlfriend in the hotel room, and that's not allowed. You want to be like Mike? Break the rules around here. I'll see you tomorrow. And then walk off. But everyone in the room knows that, you know, Roger Saffold did it. He wasn't exactly going to get cut.
You know, when you said you know? Mike, that reminded me. There was another fight, too. Cowboys.
Oh, yeah, Cowboys had a fight as well. Yeah. I saw a Twitter
Micah
on this.
Micah Parsons got involved in a – was with the Rams, I think.
Do you want Micah Parsons involved in any sort of scuffle?
No, you don't want him. I want him to be ready to kill people.
That's right. When the money is made.
On a Sunday.
Not a joint practice.
In September,
practice.
October, November. Yeah, if he gets to a fight, you know, what if it's really bad and he gets suspended?
Right. Exactly. These guys.
Such a cowboy thing to do.
What are you doing? It must, you know what, I hate to excuse it because I know, but you ever been, we've all done it. You ever been like working out in the yard and it's 1,000 degrees and you just get frustrated. You're just like, oh, I still got a weed whack. This lawn is taking forever. I still got to rake a bit. Oh, I still got to trim that. I still got to pull weeds. And the heat is just getting to you over and over again. And no matter how many times you stop for a water break, the heat's just driving you crazy. I think that's what's going on. These guys, they get angry when a guy does a move on them that could cause them injury. So they fight back. But I wonder how much of like, it's 1,000 degrees here. I'm melting. I'm wearing all these pads and I just want to play. I just want to get the season started. I hate doing this. These practices and going over and over again. I just want to play. And you just get frustrated. That's got to be it. Some of these places, I don't know how they do it. Metairie, Louisiana. What's the temperature there? 210 degrees?
I mean, I know that the Texans have a dome.
Yeah.
But it still blows my mind that the Cowboys are the only smart team, I think, right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they go to Oxnard every single year. I know it always served to help push their brand a little bit. Like, let's just reach the West Coast. But it makes all the sense in the world. Why don't more of these teams like let's just go to North Dakota?
Yeah, go somewhere.
Can't be that hot in North Dakota.
Yeah, but you know what? Maybe that's old man me talking. Maybe
I couldn't do it.
Like maybe when I was 20, I was like, yeah, it didn't bother me. But listen,
that was one of the things we talk about around here too, because you have Texas high school football starting up.
Yeah,
high schools don't have domes.
I know. They're all
so,
out there.
So, I mean, they're doing practices later in the day, when it gets
16, 17-year-old kids?
Yeah.
Make them work.
But you always, I know, but you always hear the story.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, one breaks down, so.
There's always one, man. There's always one.
Just hoping they're, you know, lots of water.
Yeah.
I saw, drove by one high school, and the guy, they had like this huge water tank.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, to put dehydrated and overheated players in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. And you know what? A lot of schools, there was these people saying, we should do laws that make it mandatory for this equipment. And they're like, you just killed 80% of high school football around the country if you do that. Some of these schools are barely surviving with uniforms.
Yeah.
They can't afford ice baths and defibrillator machines. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, it's a tough argument either way.